Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Rick returns next Sunday. Indivisible Charlottesville is dedicated to resisting the Trump agenda. They focus on national issues in Virginia's 5th Congressional District, as well as important local issues. Returning to the wake-up call this morning are Indivisible volunteers Corinne Casey. Corinne lives just south of Charlottesville in Batesville with her husband and two young children. Before turning to mothering full-time 5 years ago, Corinne worked as a program manager for a local environmental consulting firm. She has a master's degree in environmental leadership from Naropa University. When not chasing her kids, she works part-time as a life coach and a freelance writer. And David Singerman. David lives in Charlottesville and is an assistant professor of history and American studies at the University of Virginia. He's an historian who specializes in the sugar industry and has published an op-ed piece in the New York Times about the industry's long record of manipulating scientific research. He has also written a piece for The Atlantic about a 19th century trade war between the U.S. and Canada over frozen fish. Welcome back, both of you.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Let's start. You've been here before, and so we've talked about the Indivisible movement before, but just for people who may not have heard about it, let's have a quick review. The Indivisible National Organization, how did it get started?
The Indivisible National Organization got started with a Google Doc, of all things. A few weeks after the 2016 election, two former congressional staffers put their heads together to try to figure out how ordinary people could push back against the Republican Congress's, what they expected to be the Republican Congress's efforts to repeal Obamacare and do all sorts of other horrible stuff with the incoming Trump administration. And what they thought was going to be a simple guide that occasionally somebody might use turned into a nationwide movement with thousands of groups and huge town hall protests across the country very quickly.
And when did that happen? Did that happen just right after the election of 2016?
Yeah.
Before the inauguration?
Yeah, in November. I think they got together around Thanksgiving of 2016. And I actually remember seeing on some liberal progressive blog around that time, like, hey, there's this Google Doc that you should all take a look at. And then around the time, I think, of the Women's March, inspired by the energy of the almost unexpected energy of that, lots of people came back to their communities from Washington or wherever they'd gone to the march and decided to join a local group.
Now, the national organization is made up of a lot of chapters, right? And one of them is right here in Charlottesville. That's you guys. How did you get started and when?
Well, right after the 2016 election, the Google Doc was forwarded to me from, I think, from my sister. And we decided that we had to do something to engage with political action and what was happening and what was going to happen. It was a fear response, a panic and fear response. And this Google document seemed like the most viable thing that we came across that as a tool to take action. And so we, right around the new year, registered a group in Charlottesville, and there were other people within the community who were also registering a group at the same time. And so we decided to all get together. So we started, I think we met at Cardinal Hall for the first time, right after the new year, and started planning our first meeting, which was in the end of January.
Now, the group supports many Democratic ideas, but you're not a part of the Democratic Party, is that correct?
That's very correct. We're not at all a part of the Democratic Party.
So if the Democrats misbehave, you'll be looking into that too, right?
Yes.
And we have.
We do.
And we have. So the guide, that Google Doc that we were referring to, which soon became a website and then a national organization with national staff and thousands of local chapters, it told us how people who'd never been involved in politics before could put pressure on their elected officials, and that was true whether they were Republican or Democratic elected officials. And so the incoming congressman here at the time was a guy named Tom Garrett, and we would protest at his office and call his office and hold rallies to get him to support bills that we liked and oppose bills that we thought were harmful to members of our community. And we would do the same thing for Senator Kaine and Senator Warner.
So to be clear, you don't work at the national level. You work at the local level with our local congresspersons or senators. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that's kind of the basic principle of the guide, is that what congresspeople, members of Congress and senators care about is getting reelected and their own constituents. And so if you live in Virginia and you call a senator from Alaska and say, hey, I don't like the vote that you're about to take, they don't care. You can't vote for them. You can't vote against them. But if you speak to your local representative, get in the local news, you can get them to listen to you pretty quickly.
Talk about your use of social media. You have to reach people, obviously, to get their support. How do you use social media to your advantage?
Well, I think right out of the gate in 2017, we put up a Facebook page, and that was the way I believe that the most people found out about us initially, and that's still one of the main ways that we share information about what we're doing or things that are happening. And then we also have a Twitter account, and we have an email that goes out really regularly. And I think those are our main social media tools at this point.
Yeah, the use of social media is what allowed the Indivisible movement across the country to spring up so quickly. And it's been an incredible benefit and tool. But it's also posed a lot of challenges because, previous generations of activist movements had to do a lot of kind of like hard work on the ground. Not that we haven't had to work hard, we've worked very hard, but they had to do a different kind of hard work over a long period of time to organize individual by individual, face to face. And the result of that was that when you finally did get 100 people to a rally, like, you knew exactly how they'd all gotten there, you'd gotten them there, and that was kind of a stronger and more robust organization that had like deeper roots. We can get 100 people to a rally tomorrow if the issue is right. But then they can kind of like fade back into the mist. And so the challenge that we faced is and that Indivisible groups across the country have faced over the last few years is kind of keeping the people involved, right? Because it's very easy to mobilize, but also easy for those people to get demobilized.
Right. But there's also a social aspect to your organization as well. You've been holding these watch parties for the Democratic debates, right? And people come out to that. Is that just politics, or is there some social aspect to that as well?
I think there's definitely a social aspect to it. And in addition to the watch parties, we have regular social happy hour times where we're just inviting people to come and get together and sometimes write postcards or take some action, but also spend time together. I think the most effective way that we've found to help people return and stay involved is when they have friendships and they're not only connected to the power of the issue or the excitement of a debate party, but there's a longer term consistency to the people who they know are going to be showing up as well, and the friendships that are there. And there are always new people who are coming that have found out about it, usually through social media of some sort, and then we want to get to know them once they're there. Yeah.
Yeah. The happy hours, by the way, are the first Thursday of every month at Champion Brewing Company, and so everybody is welcome. Just two other things about the kind of social component. One is that I think that's what has kept a lot of us involved. So it's not like a clear distinction between like, well, we have social events where that are at a brewery or something, and then there's like, boring meetings where you do the hard work. Like, it's all mixed together. And I think one of the things that I was surprised about, and I know a lot of other people were at the very beginning, was actually like how much fun it was to go to these, protests or rallies. You would think it would be you could worry that it might be a kind of angry experience, but actually, it's almost like joyful, and you find people who, who share your beliefs and your concerns, and that just makes it a much more enjoyable experience. And I think it's the enjoyment and the fun that keeps people coming back.
We have Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers Corinne Casey and David Singerman with us in our studio this morning. We're talking about what they're doing and their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I want to talk to you about issues and how you go about choosing an issue to support. There are just so many issues now. I mean, there's a new issue every day almost, it seems like, coming out of the Trump administration. And, of course, that trickles down to the local. It has effects on us locally. So when you get together as a group to decide what you want to support, how do you go about doing that? How do you pick an issue out of the many that are out there?
Well, I think at the beginning of the year, we sort of laid out some broad categories that were really important to us that we knew were most likely going to be very alive throughout the year. And so that has sort of helped in the big picture guide the direction that we're going in. And then I think on a week-to-week basis, we're paying attention to both what's happening at a national level and also what's alive in our community and what other activist groups are working on, and making sure that we are allying ourselves with causes that are very alive in our community right then and with other groups. That's one way that we're paying attention. And then I think specifically for Indivisible, a lot of our focus is on electoral politics. Like, we're paying very much attention to elections and candidates and how we can hold our elected representatives accountable. And so we have a sort of timeline and guide for how we're trying to build toward the election or what's going on with our representatives or candidates who are in the area, and trying to make sure that we're really bringing attention and taking advantage of opportunities to bring people in to those.
And speaking of local elections, one of your own is running for the city of Charlottesville, right?
That's right. Michael Payne. Yeah.
That's exciting. Are you guys part of that campaign? Are you helping him? Are you campaigning for him?
Not yet. During the primary season, when he was working to get on the ballot, we certainly were, yeah. And for Sally Hudson as well. And I believe that we will do whatever he wants us to do.
Michael was one of our founding members, and right. I think all of us were very happy, and none of us were surprised when he announced that he was going to run for city council. Mm-hmm. And I think that he was the first candidate that we endorsed. Mm-hmm. It seemed, you know, it would have been ridiculous for us not to endorse him, given how close our relationship was with him, or is. And we were really proud to campaign for him, and we're thrilled that he came in first in the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
Right. And we've had Michael here at WPVC mm-hmm. for a full hour about 3 weeks ago. If you missed that, you can catch that on our sister website, cvillepodcast.com. Michael's interview is there as well if you are interested and want to look at that. Let's talk about 5th District now. That's where you put so much energy. And Denver Riggleman. I want to quote one of Denver's campaign promises. He said he will be the most accessible representative the district has ever had. True or false?
False.
I mean, I want to remain open to the possibility that he's going to hold 100 town halls in the next, you know, in the remainder of the year. But he keeps making promises about holding a listening tour and holding multiple town halls. And he's only done one, and only at the very last minute.
Talk about your efforts to draw him out, to get him to be more transparent and more visible in the community. I know you've been taunting him a bit.
Taunting is a harsh way to put it. We've been presenting him with, you know, with the words that you just quoted and other statements that he keeps making. If he didn't keep saying he was going to be so transparent and accessible, then that might be one thing. But nobody wants to stand up and say that they're going to be the most secretive, hidden congressman the 5th sure. District has ever had. So he doesn't sure. say that. We want to give people the opportunity, citizens the opportunity to ask him questions, right, about the votes that he's taken, about sure. the votes that he's claimed to take but actually hasn't taken, about the support that he's given to you know, Donald Trump's various cruel and racist policies. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised that Denver Riggleman doesn't want to answer those questions. But it is a bit shameful that he's our representative and he keeps kind of sneaking around the district.
Is there one issue at the level of the 5th District that troubles Indivisible that you're mostly concerned about, or does one issue stand out?
Well, I would say that when Tom Garrett was the representative and the Republicans were in control of Congress, then preventing them from stripping health care away from tens or hundreds of thousands of people in Virginia was, you know, the priority that got the Indivisible movement going and the thing that kind of kept animating us. We never saw, we always see more enthusiasm, the most enthusiasm for events and issues focused around healthcare than,
sure,
than anything else.
Sure.
Right now, because Denver Riggleman is sort of like in the weird limbo of being a minority member of Congress, he's kind of powerless, which is great, I should say, but it does mean that he hasn't gotten the chance to kind of cast, you know, as many dangerous votes. So it's more of a, to me at least, it seems like a panoply of issues, things about immigration in particular, gun violence, obviously, that he's on the wrong side of.
Just a minute to go before we break. Let me give you an easy one. Talk about Constituents Day and what happens on Constituents Day.
At Denver Riggleman's office?
Whatever you're
doing. That was actually a very grassroots thing that Indivisible leadership did not start. That was a number of Denver Riggleman's constituents wanted to talk to him, which is their constitutional right, and he wasn't showing up, and so they started going to his office. And after a couple of weeks of that, it gained a lot of momentum, and they had people going, I think, every hour all day on a Monday, and the news media caught wind of this and made it into a story. And you might say that had an influence on Denver Riggleman's like suspiciously timed decision to announce a town hall on the eve of the Constituents Day.
Wow.
So that's exactly the kind of action that the Indivisible Guide suggests we should do.
Right. And this time it worked. I mean, you got to move him a little bit.
We got to move him a little bit.
Yeah,
yes.
Sure. Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers, Corinne Casey and David Singerman in our studio this morning. We are talking about what their organization is doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. After the break, more with David and Corinne. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with David Singerman and Corinne Casey from Indivisible Charlottesville, and we're talking about their organization and what they're doing to resist the Trump agenda. I want to talk about an issue that I'm sure you have a position on, and that's immigration.
Well, I think Indivisible nationally and Indivisible Charlottesville as well, you know, we're completely outraged and distraught by it. I think as far as what we are doing at a local level, it is aligning ourselves with local groups that are working to take action on it. Sin Barreras and also Hands Off Maria are two groups, and there's a bill that in front of the local that we're hoping will come in front of the state legislature with regards to allowing undocumented folks to have a driver's license, and that's something that we are trying to help be highlighted as a really important way that we can take action at the state level.
Talk a little bit about the story behind this driver's license thing. It was a temporary law in Virginia, as I understand. Has it expired, or is it about to expire and leave undocumented without the ability to drive?
I don't know the specific details around it. I do know that it was a law that was signed into law by now Senator Warner when he was our governor, and that there's this new legislation that would make it a lot easier for undocumented people to have driver's license, which is a really important thing that they need in order to get jobs and to be able to
to be contributing citizens.
Yes.
You can't really manage without a car.
Right.
Not in our society, at least. Talk about Trump's policy and your feelings about Trump's policy with this separating children from their families. What's Indivisible's position? I mean, I know what your position is. You don't like it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But is there a way to make change here, to make it easier for these people?
That's one of the odd positions about having a member of Congress who's in the minority, right? Because we know how most of the Republican, we're not a partisan organization, right? But we know how most of the Republicans in Congress are going to vote on this sort of issue. And unfortunately, Riggleman has sided with his party, which has, you know, largely backed up or been shamefully silent in the face of the child detention and family imprisonment and family separation policies. So one of the things that we've been trying to figure out is what we can do here at a local level to make a difference at the national level about immigration. And I think that that's sort of why we've wound up focusing our efforts more on the State House and local groups like Sin Barreras and Hands Off Maria, because there's not much leverage that we have with respect to the people who can make policy or change policy at the federal level for the moment.
Is this really immigration policy, or is it just thinly veiled racism? I'm going to ask you just personally about what you think of that.
I mean, I don't think it's thinly veiled, right? that's the only place I disagree with that.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Corinne, mm-hmm. Did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I would agree with David that I think it's at the root, it's racism.
What about refugees and asylum seekers? That's a sort of a similar related issue. I guess some of these issues don't really show up as much in Charlottesville because we're not really close to the border. But the effect it has on minorities, of course, and people of color mm-hmm. is significant no matter where you live.
Mm-hmm. And there is a large, you know, refugee population in Charlottesville.
Oh, right.
I think it's the International Rescue Committee, right, mm-hmm. Has a large presence here. And that's one of the points that we have tried to make when interacting with members of Congress and the Senate, is that we might be far from the border, but that doesn't mean that humanitarian issues and just issues of humane treatment of other human beings don't apply to us.
Right. All right, so let's move on to something easy now, gun control. I was being a smart aleck. The Virginia legislature held a special session earlier this year. What happened? Did they make any progress?
The Republicans, again, decided to shut it down after 90 minutes without casting any votes about gun control, gun violence. So apparently they think everything's fine. Apparently the majority in Richmond thinks that everything's fine, which I think only caused us to redouble our efforts to elect progressives to statewide office this year.
And I'm going to come back to that later on about how important it is to elect progressives both at the state level and at the federal level. We tend to concentrate on the federal level because there's so much noise coming from Washington, but there's mm-hmm. quietly things going on in the state legislature which are not healthy either.
Yep.
So I'm going to come back to that later on. I wanted to ask you about the red flag laws, and do you feel that they unfairly target minority groups?
Can you specify which red flag laws you're talking about?
Well, there's a wave passing over some legislatures where these laws are called red flag laws, and basically they look, you know, if you do something, if someone reports you or you do something that's out of the ordinary, you can get flagged. Some people think that these laws are going to affect minority groups and persons of color far more than they will others. And I'm wondering whether that's something that Indivisible has talked about or whether or not you have a position on that.
We haven't talked about it yet, but I imagine that we will if it becomes something that our community is talking about and begins affecting our community.
Have you had any rallies or any activities with regard to gun control Any protests or anything that you've organized so far?
We have, before the special state legislature gun control session, we work closely with Moms Demand Action on a regular basis, and when they are wanting to demonstrate or put on a rally or protest, we are always, or maybe always, I can't say always, but whenever they ask, whenever they reach out to us, we are right there to show up with them. And I know that was the case this summer when they were really pressing for some change, hoping for some change.
Sometimes in the discussion of gun control, we've had so many incidents, we've had so many mass shootings. Sometimes it feels like there's no hope, that we will never get past this. Your thoughts on that? I mean, mm-hmm. You're fighting for this. You're helping these groups. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's still hope that we can get serious gun legislation in this country?
I absolutely do. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but I think, mm-hmm. you know, when I start to feel overwhelmed by how challenging it could be to actually bring about some structural change on a national level, I quickly remind myself of what it is that we need to do and can do and are doing at a more local level. And so the strongest thing that we can do right now is to get a state legislature that is blue so that we can pass strong gun laws at a state level. That is absolutely something that we can do. Both state houses are at play, and we can, and that would be a huge step forward for this area and this state, and that's where we have the most power.
I want to ask you about women's reproductive rights, because we were just talking about the state level, and we have, and I found this on your Facebook page, which I hadn't seen before, Virginia State Senator Bryce Reeves. You have a quote from him. He's talking about the transvaginal ultrasound bill, which he says, "I got to tell you, I think it helps women make a logical and rational decision." I mean, this seems appalling to me.
Bryce Reeves, as a representative, is overall appalling in many, many ways. He's a state senator in the 17th district, and Amy Laufer is the Democratic represent the candidate running against him right now, and it's one of the closest, biggest toss-up races within arm's length of this area. And we posted about Bryce Reeves because we really want to help Amy win. Certainly talking about this law in particular is totally outrageous. Anything that you read about Bryce, what Bryce Reeves has done or is saying, is just as enraging as that. And Amy is a progressive, running a really strong campaign right nearby, and has the potential to no longer make relevant anything that Bryce Reeves has to say.
And I want to remind our listeners that we're talking about something that's going to happen this November. I mean, this is an off-year election.
That's right.
And turnout tends to be poor.
That's right.
But there are some serious issues that affect Virginians.
I think every serious issue that you look at a national level is also relevant at the state level. So if we want to make progress with these issues that are so upsetting to us, taking action at the state level is what we can do. And that's not glamorous, exciting action. That's phone banking, canvassing, talking to your friends, reaching out to the campaigns to see what they need and how you can help, and dedicating yourself to slogging through some uncomfortable work for a couple of hours every week in order to make this change happen.
And I would also add one other thing, which is that if you're thinking of donating money to a presidential candidate, actually they don't really need it. They have millions of dollars. They have national fundraising bases. The candidates who really need money and where your money will make the biggest difference are local candidates in Virginia, whether it's, Donna Price, who's running for the Board of Supervisors in Albemarle County, in Scottsville against Jason Kessler's lawyer on the Republican side, or whether it's Amy Laufer who's running against Bryce Reeves. State and local candidates really need support of all kinds. That's the most effective use of your time and your money.
Mm-hmm. And Jim Hingley, who's running for a Commonwealth attorney in Albemarle County, whose opponent is just, I don't know, a version of Bryce Reeves-esque, and for criminal justice reform in this area, that's the most powerful race that can affect that.
And I think it's refreshing that we've seen so many women putting their candidacy out there this time. The senior statesmen of Virginia hold these forums over at the senior center, and of the six candidates that were there at the forum, five of them were women. So I think that's great. And I don't think if we just leave this women's right thing to men, I don't think we're going to see any serious progress because men just don't seem to get it. to put it very mildly. I want to talk to you a little bit about climate change. Again, from your Facebook page, I see that you've done some work in that. How are you getting people to take this seriously, climate change? I'm talking about your organization, of course.
How are we getting people to take climate change seriously?
Right. I mean, you must run into science deniers all the time in your work.
Yeah, I don't know if I do run into that many science deniers. I feel like for the most part, people know that climate change is a really big issue. I just saw a graphic recently from a state fair where they had a line on a giant poster board, and at one end it said, "I don't believe climate change is that important an issue," and at the other end it said, "Addressing climate change is the most important thing that we can be doing." And they had little stickers that they were giving to all of these people, very state fair, very diverse group of people walking around, and asked them to just put their sticker down on that spectrum. And to see the graphic, it was incredibly lopsided toward this is the most important issue that we need to deal with. So my sense is the vast majority, and maybe this is just, you know, my optimistic sense, but I believe that the majority of Americans know what an important issue this is. And the problem is that our representation are bound to corporate money that doesn't allow them to actually take effective action to address it.
It seems to be the same story repeating itself over and over. We have a population that wants to be more progressive, and we've got these people, both in the Virginia State Legislature and in Washington, that are trying to resist it, seemingly for their own personal gain. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. I mean, if you listen to the Democratic debate, several of the candidates, you know, Elizabeth Warren in particular, all of these issues that you're bringing up, you know, gun control and climate change and immigration, a lot of these boil down to corruption, pure and simple, and needing to deal with that fact. And I think when you look at what corruption actually means in this sense, it is the ties to corporate money that takes away the ability of democracy to work effectively.
Do you think you work principally inside Charlottesville and county?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as largely a progressive population here with progressive ideas? They would favor action on climate change, for example. You said you didn't run into many people a minute ago, and I find that surprising because they seem to be on the news shows all the time, climate deniers. So I'm wondering if we're in a little honeycomb here.
I think that's true for the city of Charlottesville. It's very, very progressive. I wouldn't say that that's, the county of Albemarle, too, I think always votes Democratic and goes that way. Certainly, the further out you get, the more, but, you know, the reason that I don't come in contact with a lot of climate deniers is that when I'm going to, if when I'm doing environmental work, the people who are showing up there are the people. It's usually the same people who really care about this and are involved in it. And so that's, you know, those are the people that I, when I'm engaging on climate issues, those are the people that I'm coming in contact with. I think what's really exciting is the way that the climate movement on a whole and Indivisible as well is starting to reframe the discussion of climate action to be about climate justice, and the way that it's starting to talk about racism and equality and the way that climate change plays out in all of these issues. And if you look at Virginia, again, the importance of the Virginia legislature, the Green New Deal, Virginia, and that the key players in that are the Sierra Club, the NAACP, and the labor unions, and that when we're talking about climate change, we're engaging with the way that it impacts our lives every day and our economy and the work that we have and the jobs that we need and that we want to be doing, and that talking about climate change through that lens is becoming normal, and I think is a really powerful way to do it.
Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers Corinne Casey and David Singerman in our studio this morning. We're talking about what they're doing to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You can stream us live online at 947wpvc.org or on your mobile device via TuneIn. After the break, more with David and Corinne. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with David and Corinne talking about the Indivisible Charlottesville and their involvement in it. I want to move on to Albemarle County's new legislation regarding protests. Of course, protests are the heart and soul of Indivisible's operation, if you will. And anything that limits protesting is not a good thing for you guys, I'm guessing. Talk about what Albemarle County wanted to do about protesting. I guess this was on county property, is that right?
So in the lead up to the 2018 election, we thought it'd be a good idea to have weekly rallies on Tuesday, every Tuesday afternoon at rush hour in a visible location to just remind people that an election was coming up. So every Tuesday, a couple of dozen volunteers would gather on the sidewalk outside of the county office building at the corner of Preston and McIntyre, right in downtown Charlottesville.
Is this where you had the Trump chicken that
time?
That's
where we had the Trump chicken, but that's coming a little bit later.
Okay.
So we had this every week, and the protests would get bigger, and it was a great visible location, and so we'd often have larger protests there. You know, it's public property, right? It's the
sure.
county office building. There's
sure.
the former school, so there's like the big grassy lawn out in front of it. And at a certain point, the county sort of invented this policy that we couldn't use the grass. And they kept giving various reasons for it. Probably shouldn't say too much because I know that like lawyers who volunteered to represent us were talking with lawyers representing the county.
Sure.
But what we were trying to do was exercise our First Amendment right and allow other people to exercise their First Amendment right to peacefully and, you know, in not at all any kind of a destructive manner use this public property to express political opinions. Right. Once we set up a giant inflatable Trump chicken in the parking lot, and that was actually a pretty big, a surprisingly big media story in local media. And it was a very, I don't want to say it was attractive-looking Trump chicken, because it was a chicken that looked like Donald Trump, but it definitely attracted a lot of interest. But yeah, protests are fundamental, not just Indivisible, but to the right of anybody in America to express their opinion about what their government's doing.
So is this issue still open? You mentioned that you have some legal counsel working on it. Has it yet to be resolved?
I'm actually not sure of the latest status. We haven't had an event there in a little while. So I wouldn't want to say anything incorrect, but yeah.
So how can this? This seems so obvious. This has got to be a First Amendment issue. I mean, this is government property. It's public property. It's a peaceful demonstration. How can there be any discussion about it?
We were wondering the same thing.
All right. Let me talk about. I want to talk about canvassing for a bit. You're very big on canvassing, which is a darn good thing because it needs to get done. talk about your efforts through canvassing to get decent, honest candidates elected.
So you are correct. We are big on canvassing at Indivisible. Canvassing is the most effective way, we've been told, to get voters to turn out to vote for the candidates. And it's also the hardest thing to get people to do. And so a lot of our work is in, well, I guess it's interesting to look at sort of the way that Indivisible started when we started this conversation as resisting the Trump agenda, right? And the way that that trickles down into daily actions that you take, it is not always a big protest, you know, on the edge of the county sidewalk or whatever, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But the way that that plays out in a daily way is by being willing to knock on some doors for candidates whose races are going to come down to a few hundred votes, or texting your friends, or doing these very sort of mundane and uncomfortable things that most people don't want to do. So we work hard to try and make it as enjoyable and fun as it can be. And for the fall, the way that we're doing that is through having some weekends of action where we are offering lots of different ways to help these progressive candidates that we think will do a great job representing us to win, and to offer lots of different ways to get involved. So if you don't want to actually knock on doors and have to talk to people, you can drive a car around for someone who is more comfortable doing that. And if you don't want to actually canvass, then you can phone bank and make phone calls, which is also a really effective way of reaching voters. And then, you know, texting campaigns and writing postcards and just all these sort of different ways to reach out to voters and spread the word.
Are you still having postcard parties? Yeah.
Yeah, we are. I mean, obviously, in the 2018 election season, we had incredibly successful postcard parties at Random Row every Thursday night, and volunteers wrote a total of like 27,000 postcards or
wow.
something like that. It was a lot of postcards.
Yeah. Wow.
This year we're doing it largely on weekends. We have a couple of weekends of action lined up in October and November, and people can go to our website, indivisiblecharlottesville.org, to see the latest dates and where they can go to have fun writing postcards. Because it is a great way to kind of dip your toe in the water of making a difference for candidates.
Sure. Is canvassing harder or easier in an off-year election? I mean, I can imagine canvassers knocking on the door and people saying, "What election?"
Mm-hmm. That's sometimes easier, uh-huh. in my opinion, than when it's a huge election year and everyone kind of knows. Even when there was the governor's race, you know, a lot more people know and have made their decisions or kind of have more information about the candidates. And when you're just talking to someone who really has no idea, it can be a much more rewarding conversation, I think, for both people. You know, helping bring, and it also feels a lot better. Like there's a feeling instead of feeling like you're the 15th person to knock on this person's door over the course of the weekend.
Sure.
It feels like you're actually reaching someone who could make a difference in an election.
Yeah. And the one other thing I'd add to that is that something I often hear when inviting people to canvass, what people often say when I invite them to canvass is, well, I don't, you know, I might have to talk to a Trump supporter. That would be terrible, right? But the way that these off-year elections work, because, as you said, turnout is often so low, is that candidates tend to win by trying to mobilize as much of their core support as possible. And so I know that, you know, Democratic candidates around here are mostly knocking on the doors of people who they're pretty sure will vote for a progressive candidate but are not sure will vote. And so those are the people that, as Corinne said, you're really actually kind of doing them a service, because you come to your door and you say, did you know there's an election happening on, you know, Tuesday? And in the lead up to a congressional race or a presidential race, everybody knows. But nowadays people say, no, I didn't know. Like, thank you for letting me know. Where do I vote? And then you kind of like stroll away from the door feeling like you've done a great service, because you have.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I want to ask you about white supremacy and hate speech. Were either of you involved in the August 12th Unite the Right rally? Were you there, either of you?
No, I was away. I was out of town that week, right. So I wasn't.
And I was in McGuffey Park at Indivisible's kind of station, helping to support the people who were on the front lines, for lack of a better
right.
word.
And so I don't have to ask you what Indivisible's position is on hate speech. Obviously, you're opposed to it. But how do you get through to people that, you know, this is just not okay? I mean, it's one of those things that seems so obvious that it's not okay, and yet it still goes on. We hear about these kinds of things every day or every week. How do you get the message through to people that hate speech is not okay?
Well, I think it depends who you're talking to, right? And this goes back to the point that you and Corinne were discussing earlier about people in Charlottesville being progressive, or thinking of themselves as progressive. One of the things that a lot of white progressives in the Charlottesville area have had to reckon with over the last couple of years, especially since August 11th and 12th, is the way that their own actions and language, even if they think of themselves as behaving in a certain way, are actually having a really, you know, can have a damaging and deleterious and effect, you know, whether it's in the school system or in calls for like civility. And so we've tried to use our voice and our like ability to reach a wide audience that is largely composed of like, you know, whiter progressives to hold educational events and let people know about issues and candidates and other events that are not organized by Indivisible that can help them educate themselves, for lack of a better word.
Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers Corinne Casey and David Singerman in our studio this morning. We're talking about what they're doing with their organization, Indivisible Charlottesville, to resist the Trump agenda. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I just want to spend a couple of minutes on Trump's continuing attacks on women. Just recently, he suggested that four female congressmen, congresswomen, go home, I think was his exact words. First of all, what is our congressman's position on this? And is there any way that we can make some inroads on fair treatment of women everywhere?
Well, I'm not sure what our congressman's position on this is. He was just sharing pictures recently of himself, you know, smiling with a thumbs up beside Trump. So I don't know. I do know that, you know, I feel like a little bit of a broken record on this, but like, and maybe this is a testament to what has happened with Indivisible over the course of the year, this year in particular, is that what Trump does and what he says is has become more like background noise to my life. Like the structural change that we want to see that existed before Trump, and he's got a big megaphone and he's got a lot of inflammatory things to say that are certainly making things only worse. But the action that we can take on a daily way to make our lives better is much more where I'm choosing to spend my time. And I think where Indivisible has sort of guided its ship as well over the course of the year, like what we can do within our community, within our county to raise up the voices that need to be heard and invite conversation and discussion with candidates who are running and try and get candidates to run and align with groups who are doing hard work and have been doing hard work since before Trump was elected. And so, you know, that Trump saying such hurtful things to those four congresswomen and having just a long history of being so there aren't even words to talk about the way that he talks about women. We have the Equal Rights Amendment that all we need is one more state to ratify it, and Virginia was right on the cusp of doing that this last legislature, and will do it if we flip our legislature blue, and that would be really exciting and a huge deal, and one more reason to canvass for a candidate that's running near you in a tight race, and that would be that would have a national consequences that would outlive Trump and you know whatever he decides to tweet or say.
We have about five minutes left, and I want to spend it talking about the upcoming election and your efforts to mobilize voters. Mm-hmm. Again, it's an off-year election, but we want our listeners to understand that it's still an important election, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Both the House and the Senate in Virginia are flippable.
That's right.
They're both very close. I think the House is only out by one vote right now, right?
Yes.
One delegate.
That's right.
And the Senate is
something very close. It might be one or two.
It's also one.
Yeah, one.
Right. And explain why. Explain some of the differences or some of the progress we could make if we could flip both the Senate and the House at the state level. What kind of things do you think might come from that?
Well, I think all of the issues that we've talked about this morning, there could be significant change that could happen if our legislature goes blue. So, you know, we were just talking about the Equal Rights Amendment. That would happen. Stronger gun laws, common sense gun laws, I think would absolutely, we could make serious progress there related to climate change and addressing that at a state level, which we can make huge advances that would have a long, dramatic impact on our lives in a daily way. And let's see, what are the other health, you know, healthcare, continuing to really strengthen.
If you want a public option on healthcare in Virginia, then we need to flip the legislature. If you want Virginia localities like Charlottesville to be able to raise the minimum wage, then we need to flip the legislature. If you want to stop the pipelines.
And a huge issue is gerrymandering. Yeah. The next state legislature is going to determine the way we go about drawing the districts. It's a huge deal. And this election will have a direct impact on that. So gerrymandering is another huge one.
Okay. And for our listeners, they would probably be in the 25th or 53rd districts, is that right?
Well, that goes to the gerrymandering that Karim was just talking about.
Yeah.
Because the city of Charlottesville, what the Republicans who drew the last maps did was kind of pack all of the blue voters the blue votes in the city of Charlottesville into one state senate district and one House of Delegates district. And then the kind of inner suburbs in Albemarle or blue areas anywhere have been split up among districts that mostly lean Republican and are hard to flip, but not impossible. So voting this year, wherever you are, is incredibly important. And if you go to our website at indivisiblecharlottesville.org, you'll be able to see which district you live in and who the candidates are there. But it matters, you know, it's important to get out the vote wherever you are and to work for candidates wherever you are.
So does Indivisible officially endorse specific candidates?
We have so far officially endorsed just Sally and Michael, but we may officially endorse more candidates, but we are supporting a number of candidates for their offices. Amy Laufer, who we mentioned, who's running against, as Corinne said, the appalling Bryce Reeves. Jim Hingley, who's running for Commonwealth Attorney. Donna Price, who's running for
Board of Supervisors in the Scottsdale District.
Tim Hickey, Jennifer Kitchen, and Elizabeth Alcorn are all House of Delegates candidates around. I think all of their districts touch include part of Albemarle, but have been gerrymandered to include very red parts of other counties. And we support all of those candidates.
I'd like to move on to your efforts to get people registered. For our young listeners who've never voted before, why do you have to be registered? What is the procedure for that?
If you want to vote in Virginia, they make it slightly annoying to register to vote. You have to do it I believe it's 22 days before the date of the election. So if you go to elections.virginia.gov, you'll be able to register online. Or if you contact us, just email us at contact@indivisiblecharlottesville.org. We'll make sure you get registered to vote. It's not complicated, but there is one form that you need to fill out. And if you aren't registered, you can't register on the day of the election. That Virginia is not a state that lets you do that.
In fact, you can't register after October 15th.
October 15th, yes.
That's the final day.
It's the final day. And one final note is you have to be registered at your current address. So if you moved over the summer, you have to re-register. And once we get a progressive majority in Richmond, we'll pass automatic voter registration, and you'll never have to do that again. So hopefully this is the last time you have to register to vote. But so make it count.
Right, right. So can you register on your smartphone?
Yeah, you can.
You go to that website, you can...
Elections.virginia.gov.
Right, and you can just register right there. Don't have to... Just put your Xbox controller aside for a moment.
Absolutely.
And get registered.
Yeah.
Talk about your efforts to move registrations forward. I know on your Facebook page you have registration events. You go to places and try to get people registered. Talk about that.
Yeah, we've done that at concerts and festivals all around the Charlottesville area. And we've been working for a couple of years in concert with groups like Virginia Organizing to do so. And we'll register anybody to vote. It's not a partisan or ideological enterprise. We believe that everybody should vote. Everybody has the right to vote. And there's no, ideological litmus test to register to vote with Indivisible Charlottesville. So we go everywhere to do that.
When you register, do you have to declare a party?
You do not. In fact, you can't.
You can't.
There's no registration by party in Virginia.
Okay. So you can just register your intent to vote even if you're still undecided.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. What's coming up with Indivisible Charlottesville in between now and the election? You've got some plans? I'm sure you do.
We have the Weekends of Action that we mentioned.
Uh-huh.
I know that there's one on October, is it the 19th and 20th, and November 2nd and 3rd, and there may be others. So people should go to our website, our Facebook page, and find out those dates, and we'll have canvassing, phone banking, postcard writing, lots of different opportunities, happy hours, lots of different opportunities to make a difference.
And if people just want to help out, if people just want to be involved, if they want to canvass, if they want to write postcards, whatever, how do they connect with you?
They can go to our website and send us a note there. They can also just email us. And if any listener has a desire to get involved and doesn't know how to get involved, they can email us, and we will absolutely personalize a a plan for them that works for them to get involved.
So all volunteers are welcome.
That's right. In fact, you can email me. My email address is david@indivisiblecharlottesville.org. Send me an email and let me know you heard about us on the radio, and we'll pay special attention.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go over the URLs one more time. We're just about out of time. You have your website. The URL is...
IndivisibleCharlottesville.org.
And if they want to reach
you... All spelled out.
Right. And if they want to reach you via Facebook, they search for...
Indivisible Charlottesville.
Could it be any more easy?
No. I would say that the next time that any of our listeners start a nationwide political movement, they should pick a word that's a little bit harder to misspell.
And say for
and
us
say.
Folks in radio. Corinne, David, thank you so much for stopping by again this year and bringing us up to date. We're so glad to have you here. As you know, this is a progressive talk radio station, and we are so indebted to you for the work you're doing. In fact, all progressives are indebted to you for the work you're doing. So thank you so much, and thank you for coming on again.
Mm-hmm. See you next
year.
Thank
you, Dan.
Indivisible Charlottesville volunteers Corinne Casey and David Singerman in our studios this morning. We've been talking about what they're doing to resist the Trump agenda. This and every episode of The Wake Up Call is available on demand at cvillepodcast.com. Join us next Sunday at 11 a.m. when Rick Moore returns to the anchor chair with another interesting guest. Coming up at noon on 94.7 WPBC, it's El Club del Sabor. For The Wake Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.